Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad
Yourself
a Man. A Mad Men podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of the Mad Men
and talk about it.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to another wonderful episode of the world's only non-findable podcast. That's right. My wife, Francesca, recently typed in Mad Men into Apple Podcasts and could not find the pod. Oh, so if you're listening to this...
How do we fix that?
We have to create...
Jamie, can you fix that?
Hey, Grok! Can you make a feed? So we're going to have to make a separate feed for each one of the shows that we do in order to actually get seen.
Good. Really?
I mean, it's either that or name this podcast Mad Men and then... Just what if we just named it?
Post it on another feed. It will kill me.
It'll kill me too. But would you rather? Would you rather die?
Poor, or live rich? What am I, Annabelle?
You know what you are? You're someone who's, you know, poor, like Don Draper.
Nothing's findable anymore. I was reminded of a Chris Rock bit for some reason.
I had a great segue into a clip. Well, it's too late now.
What you're doing
you fucked it up. I know you didn't know. I didn't know it was going to happen until you set me up. Okay. You know what you're like? This is Vince and money or something.
You see how you are with money? You don't understand it.
You don't understand money. All right, now tell me about Chris Rock.
I was just saying, like, I remembered a Chris Rock bit from, like, one of his HBO specials, and I'm, like, Googling a part of it. Can't find it. There's no video of it anywhere.
Have you ever asked Grok or any other AI bot about it?
Grok?
if you ask them, they don't know either, but they'll be very confident with their wrong answer.
Oh yeah.
Like when they told me the episode of Downton Abbey where Lord Grantham vomits blood on the table was the red wedding episode of Game of Thrones. I was like, I hope doctors don't use this.
Yeah, I'm grading, 18 papers, 18 kids that watched the same movie. And curiously, like six of them have cited the same dialogue that doesn't actually exist in the movie.
Because,
that is interesting. that this character never said this or really anything like it, but you all seem to quote it. Very interesting.
Thank you guys for listening to this podcast, and it's time for us to talk about the season 3, episode 11 of Mad Men, The Gypsy and the Hobo, or as I like to call it, the G word and the H word. Mm-hmm. And we have a wonderful return champion guest. You know him already. You love him already. He's the editor and co-owner at Defector, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else. It's David J. Rawl.
Oh, hey. Thank you for having me. It's nice to be here.
Oh, it's so good to have you back.
J stands for jorking my penis.
Jorking my penis. It's one word. It's Hungarian. Yes. And that's my family's tradition. Vince is going to
mock it's like when the Greeks smash plates.
Yep. Do Greeks do that?
Hitting an opa so loud that I wake up my wife and get in trouble.
See, I just learned something about Greeks on this fucking podcast.
Yeah, they come to your house and break your stuff. And they're like, this is our culture.
If only people could find this podcast so that they could learn things about Greeks.
Yeah.
David, it's so nice to have you back. This is the third time you've been on the Mad Men season of our podcast. And so this will be the third time I ask you, what's your favorite advertisement?
So can I take the listeners behind the game, which is that I totally forgot that this was part of it, and I worry that I had used all of my answers. But while I was listening to you two fight at the beginning of it,
that's what we do.
I was reminded of it's more of a favorite commercial advertisement.
That's totally
television
fine.
Ad. But I was happy to see recently that the lady from the Orbitz ad Orbit.
The pretty airline lady.
The nice teeth.
Yes, but a supporting character in that, the woman that said, "Who are you calling a cootie queen, you lint licker," while neck rolling really furiously, is in a new ad with Jennifer Coolidge.
Oh.
And I was so happy to see her because I think of that as being like one of the great one scene performances that I've seen, like legitimately on television or in film, like just a completely batshit line reading that she hits 470 feet on a line. And then she like never got to be in movies or anything. Like she just like hopefully is continuing to work steadily in TV commercials that I've missed. But she rocks. Shout out to the Lint Liquor Cootie Queen actors.
What was the commercial that with Jennifer Coolidge? Was it Uber Eats?
It was, oh gosh, I don't think it was. It was a credit card one. They're both getting their hair done at the same time.
Mm.
And so she's kind of like the straight man to Jennifer Coolidge doing like the version of the Jennifer Coolidge thing that you can do while talking about like double miles.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like kind of the totally denuded, unfunny version of one of the great actor bits that anyone does. Now.
I found the 15-second version of it.
Hey, my treat today. I don't think they'll take that here.
That's her. Lint Liquor.
Yep. Hang it in there. Shout out to her. I still think she should have gotten like a sitcom off that shit. It used to be back in the days when things were good, that you could just, if you did, you know, a couple of good tweets, they would let you appear in sitcoms.
Didn't they make like a whole caveman television series based on the Geico caveman?
Nick Kroll was in it, dude. It was it was Nick Kroll's big like breakout role, and then it was canceled after like 1.5 episodes. Like they just like stopped airing it halfway through one of them. We're like, sorry, we're sorry.
Yeah, it turns out the world doesn't want this.
Yeah, worse is not working out.
Yeah, I mean that was kind of an old model of TV commercials. How they used to do it. They used to have this entire show is sponsored by cigarette, and then they would just talk about other stuff. But constantly turn to the camera and say, I am smoking cigarette brand cigarettes.
Yeah. There's a lot. There's still a little bit of that happens. And it's like, I think for a long time it went away. But then a background noise sitcom that my wife enjoys is Ghosts, which has a lot of funny people in it, but is not a funny show.
Sure.
But it has a lot of like in-stream advertising for Amazon Prime in it. Like they're constantly getting packages and being like, damn, I just ordered that. Amazon Prime came through fast. And then like one of the ghosts is like, I wish we'd had that when I was alive. And like it's just like it is brutal.
I still haven't watched it yet, but I read enough reviews where I feel like I have the Ice Cube remake of War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
Is it direct to Amazon Prime? And like the climactic moment apparently comes down to like the Prime drone and 2-day shipping.
Oh,
so good. Jesus. I was wondering if you'd seen it because you referenced it in the bit that you wrote about A House of Dynamite. Mm-hmm. And I was like, there's no way that Vince would have watched that movie and not read about it. Like, I would know if you had written something about it. But it is, I feel like I have very confident opinions about that movie and I will never come close to seeing it. But I have in my head, like even created scenes where it was just Ice Cube sitting in front of a laptop being like, oh, hell no. Nah. And then the director's like, can we do another one? And he's like, oh, hell no. Nah. You know,
I mean, I did a plot recreated with reviews of that movie, which involves, you know, reading like 50 movie reviews and piecing together every single thing that happens in the movie. So, yes, I feel like I saw it. And I never got around to actually watching it, which I did with Madam Web. And I'm happy that I did because I do think that is one of the defining films of the early 2020s.
Did it have that kind of like anti-movie feel that some of those things do where it's like it's shaped like a movie and it's got movie actors in it but movie things don't really happen?
No, that one was fascinating because it felt like
that was like the Happy Gilmore sequel that we watched.
Yeah,
it was like that. Just like a 110 minute beer commercial.
No, Madam Web was more like they realized it was a bad idea like during pre-production but still had to go through the motions of making it. It was supposed to be set in one time period, but then they realized like that time period didn't match up with the timeline for Peter Parker, where the entire hook of the movie was like she was friends with Peter Parker's mom or something.
When she
shit.
Was researching spiders in the Amazon?
Yeah, exactly. So then they had to like go back and retcon it from the mid 90s to the early 2000s. So it'll be like people dressed very like 1995 coded, but then it's like, oh, we're having a dance sequence to Britney Spears' Toxic for some reason. And you're like, okay.
It's so cool how you could spend like $150 million on something and you just have no idea what it even is when you start doing it. Like, there's not a finished script. No one like knows why it exists. And then they just have to make it anyway.
It is so depressing that like the really two is. Modes of getting paid for art nowadays are like, I'm making my TV show. Mostly it's like a vampire show about Amazon Prime being good. Or it's just like, I wrote this Civil War drama, but I tied in IP from Hungry Hungry Hippos. Yeah. And it's like, those are the two paths you can take. There's no more originality. But this is not a show about originality. No, This is a show about Mad
Men.
This
is about episode 311 in which we come original.
Right. We're going to come original on this podcast. But first,
cannot wait to hear that about a B story. It's like
it's going to be stupid. But first, you got to play the theme song. Mad yourself, man. Mama always said you'd be the chosen madman. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. Blue moon in your eyes. Mad man. Mad man. Mad man. Podcast. All right, everybody. Once again, we are going to be talking about from season 3 of Mad Men, episode 11, The Gypsy and the Hobo. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
An old flame and potential client re-enters Roger Sterling's life. Joan's husband searches for a new job, and Don finally comes clean to Betty about his true identity.
Mm-hmm. Quite an exciting synopsis. But Vince, at the time that this episode is set in, I believe we need some cultural context.
We certainly do, and we're going to put some of that back in with a little something that we like to call the news machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent.
That's news, isn't it?
Okay.
Oh, boy. You know, this is maybe like the most, what would you call it? Seasonal specific episode. Because this episode, it premiered October 26, 2009. Mm. We're currently recording this October 30th. And and it takes place in the lead up to Halloween, so one would presumably
look at this.
The setting, the air date, and the recording of this podcast date are all within like 3 or 4 days of each other.
All the stars have aligned to create this particular episode, which will be listened to by so few people because we do not know how to do search engine optimization.
Who needs it? Who needs it?
Who needs it?
We're going all the way back to October 26th, 1963. We're going to the San Francisco Chronicle. I don't think I've gone there before. Very exciting stuff. Headline, hopeful view of U.S. life after A-War. A lot of headlines about the A-War.
Atomic War?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm.
Three men, trained as experts in human behavior, focused on fallout shelters and the prospects for man under nuclear attack yesterday. Mm. They offered conclusions that may surprise many who think of shelters as grossly unpopular, of thermonuclear attack as the ultimate paralyzing horror, and of a world after all-out war as uninhabitable. Not at all, said the three scientists.
No, 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 no.
Nothing could be more further from the truth.
90% of Americans believe shelters would help survival in a nuclear war, said one. Nearly 80% favor a federally financed shelter building program, and only 13% are opposed.
I love that. What I love that as a solution to nuclear war is like, don't worry. The government
popularism. It's been with us for so long.
Just don't worry, we're just gonna build underground, just a series of Hamas-like tunnels.
Subheading, no panic. If the H-bombs were actually falling, said another, the best current research on disaster studies and shelter experiments indicates that people would probably behave very well indeed.
What the fuck is this?
These men have been trained in human behavior, Matt. Yeah. Just listen to what they're saying.
No, people like when everything explodes.
Yep. I have been trained in human behavior, and I also moonlight as the board chairman of the shelter building, Shelter-O-Matic Shelter Company. And after the attacks were over, said the third researcher, American life might well go on, sturdily and democratically, even in the face of a death toll of tens of millions.
You know, there's one thing Americans are good at. It's living through fire. And so
handling a disaster normally.
Yeah. Yeah. So
all evidence shows Americans will walk it off and get back to the business of America.
And we'll just put some Neosporin on those radiation burns and go back to playing baseball.
We do not see people change from normally law-abiding and socialized human beings into barbaric animals, he said.
It feels like my
shirt that says not involved in human trafficking is raising a lot of questions already answered by my shirt ass answer.
We do not see that. No. For my hands are covering my eyes.
The three behavioral scientists spoke at a panel on civil defense held at the annual meeting of the Human Factors Society in Palo Alto. Don't know what that is. I should have looked it up. That's my fault.
These are all proto-tech guys.
Yes, that's very what it feels much so. Like. We got another A-war. Ease rain on A-weapons, says Barry.
Oh, who the fuck is Barry?
It's going to be Goldwater, I bet.
Oh, it's got to be Goldwater.
Senator Barry Goldwater said here yesterday that NATO commanders in Europe should have the power to use tactical nuclear weapons on their own initiative in any emergency.
Just in case, for fun.
I like that this is also somehow still seasonally appropriate with, like, this is, like, the third to last post that Trump put up. Is like, we're going to go back to testing nukes.
Oh,
like,
really?
There's no way that everybody else gets to do it and we don't.
Yeah, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
At present, American law says that a nuclear weapon can be used only on direct orders of the president. Goldwater characterized atomic tactical devices as, quote, merely another weapon, which would be employed chiefly to destroy enemy airfields in the case of conflict.
I love it. It's just like, listen, first of all, where is the Constitution does it say people can't arm themselves with tactical nukes? And where in the Constitution does it say we can't give them to NATO to do with what, you know, as they
as
please?
As they please, yeah.
What part of bare arms doesn't make sense to you?
Exactly. Oh, that's good.
Elsewhere, we have a bandit's $1.35 ride to justice.
Cool. I mean, great. Fucking headline.
This better not also involve atomic war.
I know.
No, it doesn't. A tall, slim ex-convict from North Carolina took a cab to the Hall of Justice yesterday and confessed to Monday's robbery of the Hibernia Bank's Mission Branch. Fun fact, Hibernia Bank, also the bank that Patty Hearst robbed.
Oh, everyone's robbing this fucking thing.
Yeah, jeez. Yeah.
I don't have the money for the fare, Bobby D. Smith, 24, told the driver, but come inside with me. I'm going to confess to a bank job. Maybe there's a reward.
That's awesome. I love that. He's like, listen, I don't have the money, but you might get a little bit just for walking in with
they
me.
They might.
Come inside. Maybe you'll get your beak wet.
Yeah.
Once inside, he told Inspector Phil Riebling, I've had four pops of methadrine. I think it's loosened my tongue. I stuck up the bank Monday.
What? Okay, so just so I'm clear, he's just manic and on speed?
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, you know what? Fuck it! That's it! Cool.
I never should have smoked that shit. Now I'm confessing to a bank robbery from 3 days ago.
Oh, and also, I didn't pay fare in the cab!
So you arrest me for that, too. I mean, basically.
Smith said he had spent the $260 he got from the bank on sports clothes, liquor, and friends.
He robbed the bank and he got $260. He robbed the whole bank?
Yeah. He said he had arrived here 8 months ago and was unemployed. I should have known better, he said. I knew police would eventually catch up with me.
But since they didn't, I figured I got a little bored. I already spent the money on methadrine.
And friends.
And friends.
And sports clothes, as you do. He added that he had done time in North Carolina for auto theft and 30 days here for petty theft. He was booked at city prison on suspicion of robbery and held for FBI agents. The cab driver left without his fare, $1.35. There was no reward.
Nice. That sucks.
Yeah, that doesn't seem fair.
Yeah.
Another one. I mean, I feel like San Francisco has been a rich text in the news machine.
Sure.
Headline, bearded and bounced.
Okay.
James Forstner, the bearded one, got the axe yesterday. Child juvenile probation officer Tom Stricula told the 38-year-old probation officer that he was guilty of insubordination in refusing Stricula's order to shave. You are dismissed, Stricula told him. Forstner.
I'm sorry, is this guy's last name Stricula?
Stricula, yeah.
It's like I'm sorry. What is the job again? Where does he work?
He is the chief juvenile probation officer, and this guy with the beard works under him somehow.
Okay, so he's a PO officer for juveniles.
Well, he's really more of a middle manager for officers for juveniles.
His name is Stricula.
Stricula is a very funny name to make up for a guy who's like an annoying stickler who fired a hippie for having a beard. Like, that is Thomas Pynchon behavior to have that name.
I want you to shave your beard.
Your beard.
Forstner, who considers his whiskers a civil liberty, immediately announced that he would appeal to the Civil Service Commission. Mm. This wasn't unexpected, Forstner said. I knew it was coming. He looked like a beatnik, Stricula said.
Sure did.
Amazing.
And finally, I got one more. Kennedy combats retardation.
All right.
Come on.
That's quite enough of that.
President Kennedy yesterday signed legislation setting up a $355 million program to combat mental retardation and announced that next week he will sign a companion bill aimed at the same goal.
We have to stop retards from being rejected from honest work. I know many retards, including Vince Mancini. And I believe that he is good at working. He also enjoys to eat cake. Sorry.
I'm more of a pie guy, but...
Good for you.
The program will seek to curb mental retardation through improved prenatal and infant care.
Oh, we have to get rid of retards.
This is like the Kennedy family fixation for the course of like 60 odd years. They're still convinced that this is everything happens because of a pill that someone takes when they're a baby.
Yes, yes, 100%. This is all.
No like, more Tylenol for.
My
nursing mothers.
My brother's son is a little retarded. He's wicked retarded.
During the day, Mr. Kennedy also spoke at a lunch of the National Association for Retarded Children. He told the audience, "We have conquered the atom, but we have not yet made a major assault.
We have not yet conquered the retard." I'm sorry.
We do these things not because they are easy, but. I'm not going to do, but yes.
But because they are tired.
Yes, there you go. Good. Someone had to do it.
Oh. Of the legislation, he commented, it will strengthen our maternal and child health and crippled children services.
Crippled.
It will initiate a new program of comprehensive maternity and infant care aimed directly at preventing mental retardation. It will help arouse local communities to a major attack on the problems of mental retardation.
Oh, man. You know what? Can I tell you why that is actually a really like appropriate story for this episode? Because this episode is called The Gypsy and the Hobo, which are two words we also do not really use anymore. Yeah. And so
you could still use hobo, I think, can't you?
I mean, you can't even use homeless. Everyone's unhoused now.
Well, if he's riding the rails, though, then it's like he's unhoused, but also rakish.
Yeah.
You do wonder if there's like a, I don't know, association of like classic hobos who are just like, can you just call me what I've always wanted to be called, which is a hobo.
Keeping the weird like symbological language alive in college studies and stuff.
I keep carving in hot pies and different people's houses.
Like no one understands. I've been writing like symbols that clearly say that this person makes stew all the time, and everybody just ignores it.
They have their own language. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, so
it's like glyphs. It's real. I just don't know what all of it means.
Yeah. So that's what's going on in the news machine. Before we get started on this episode, of course, I have a Draper D story based on a wonderful summer song, which I am calling a bummer song. And here's just a little bit of it. You may not know what the song is until you hear it, and then you'll be like, oh, good. Here you go.
A week of cheating on his stuck-up wife. Hot for teacher every night. Don's a horny guy. Miss Farrell knows that this will end someday. She's been Don't you know that I'm Don Draper? I won't get caught with you. Just get in the car, you hoe. Let's go, 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 go.
So you will really enjoy that if you know that song at all. And if you don't, tough luck, bitch.
What's it called? Summer Sky?
It's called a summer song by like Chad and Brad or something.
It's Jan and Dean, I think.
Yeah, it's two people. It's something and something.
Yeah.
You know, a summer song, a bummer song. Because, hey, it was kind of a bummer of an episode.
Yeah, nobody's having fun in this one.
That's right. It's a lot of sadness all the way around. So we're talking about season 3, episode 11. The Gypsy and the Hobo. Vince, start us off. Your general thoughts.
Well, this episode, it's about how when you're single, nobody wanted to fuck you. But now that you're in a relationship, she bought you a new shirt, cleaned the crust out your eyes, everybody want to fuck you.
Wow.
Sometimes they just call you up and say, hey, we was having a dick sucking contest and wondering if you'd be judge.
Man,
sorry, I'm trying to do a Chris Rock.
So you did find the Chris Rock clip, or at least you found it in your memory bank.
I found it in my memory.
In your mind. And you did it out loud. And that's fine. This, you know.
Well, if I would have found it, I would have just played it. That's what I wanted to do, but I couldn't.
I'm glad you did it with the accent, and I'm happy.
Yeah, that was very brave.
I thought I just mostly did volume, but, you know, whatever you guys want.
Hey, you know what? The point is.
You characterize it however you want to characterize it.
The point is that I always stand by my podcast co-hosts, no matter who's dragging them.
That's right. That's beautiful. This is. I would say I like this episode a lot. I'm obviously drawn to any Mad Men episode that has clear arcs, like full arcs, and like a button, which this one had. I mean, my main thought is that I wish Dawn had just left Suzanne in the car and the show just never talked about her again, like the Pine Barrens
It seemed like they were heading in that direction. Like as somebody who also cards on the table, I think Abigail Spencer's a dreamboat. And I was kind of like the whole time that he's like getting ready to make this big confession to Betty, I was kind of like, you know, there's like it's a lady in your car, dude.
Whole
you
time.
Gotta go let her out. Yeah. Go put some music on and crack a window or something. Like
you gotta bring her a water bowl, dude.
Yeah.
Poke a hole in the roof of the car. She can't breathe.
Your Gumar can't breathe.
Treating her like a lizard you caught. Yeah.
Get a little
sun lamp.
Yeah.
Putting a sign in the window that's like, she's listening to her favorite records and has plenty of snacks.
I'm also, I really like the Roger Sterling, like completely, mostly superfluous Casablanca plot.
I'm
also a big sucker for Casablanca, so maybe that's why I like that one. But I really enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah. Dave, what'd you think?
It's good. I mean, it's like, this is like kind of I'm reminded of it like every time we do one of these, but then I haven't gone back and like done an actual rewatch. It, like just how high the like quality, like the production value, performance, everything is in all of these. Like even I was still watching the show when this episode aired. So like a lot of stuff was sort of coming back to me when I was watching it. But also it's just like if you dropped in out of nowhere and just like watch these people act and move around through these sets for 45 minutes or however long it is, it's like it's just really satisfying to look at. And
absolutely.
The last episode that I did with you all was a Betty showcase, and this is like a big time John Hamm showcase, and he's terrific in it. I really enjoyed watching him do big acting stuff in this.
Absolutely.
And whisper, just whisper a lot in this episode.
Like looking, having the wet, like crying Jordan eyes and whispering 75% of his lines is basically where he is for most of this episode.
Yeah. It's kind of genius. Like the sequence that like happens halfway through this episode and kind of just is the rest of the episode of Don coming back home to like grab some stuff so he can go, you know, with his Gumar out to, you know, wherever the fuck they were going to go. Yeah,
like Vermont or somewhere.
Yeah.
Norwich.
Yeah. And
I believe is in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Sure. And then like, you know, he gets there and of course he's met with the nightmare of, oh my God, my family is here. Oh my God, my wife is here. Trying to get the hat from the car. He's like, oh, hold on, I left my hat. Can't go in a house without a hat. And she's like, forget your hat. We need to talk. Like, the entire sequence happens with Miss Farrell in the car. Mm-hmm. And that is, it's so like amazing, the tension of that throughout the entire, you know, he's crying, he's explaining, you know, shit that we already know as viewers to his wife. And the whole time I'm like, there's a lady in the car. You've got to get the lady out of the car.
Go get her, dude.
Like,
well, but you can tell like he thought that at first, but then at a certain point he resigned himself to like, nope, I just have to let this play out. And the lady in the car is going to have to figure it out on her own.
It's crazy. The tension.
She's gonna have to drill her own air holes.
Yeah, she's going to figure it out. He's sitting there crying, going, she's an adult. She can figure this out. Yep.
Surely she knows how to get out of a Buick.
Yeah, I just hope she doesn't knock. And the tension of that is so palpable that at some point as I'm watching it, I feel like I'm cheating on Betty too.
Yeah.
Where I'm just going like, please don't knock on the door. Please don't knock on the door. And it's incredible. It really, for me, is one of the like best Mad Men sequences. There's a lot
that
of
was
good
very
stuff
Hitchcockian.
In this. Yeah.
But also,
there's
like
a bomb under your seat, the suspense. You know, they say about what did he say about suspense? Like that action is a bomb going off, and suspense is like there's a bomb under the seat and it's ticking. This is like that, but instead of a bomb under a seat, it's a Gumar in a car.
It's a really hot girl.
Yeah, it has a kind of also. It's like kind of a it's tropey in the sense that like this is basically like a thing that would happen to Zach Morris, except it is. Yeah. But it's like played for maximum trauma and significance. Yeah. Successfully played for all of
Ray
that
Liotta's
stuff.
Ray Liotta's trying to like sell silencers and stir the sauce, and he's got to get his mistress out of the car. Yep. Too.
Yeah. I can't go without my hat. That is, yeah. Maybe that's a callback to the Harry black helicopter scene in Goodfellas.
And the other storylines are great too, and they all kind of like tie in together in this really, I think, I don't know, it's a really sleek way, in a way that's not too like on the nose arty, in terms of like you've got these different relationships at different stages. You've got Joan and Dr. Rape kind of like at the, you know, at the stage where Don almost was, I mean, he wasn't in a relationship, but Don runs away to join the army. And, you know, at the end, Greg, who I am calling Dr. Rape, because lest we forget, he did rape Joan last season.
Yeah.
He is, it's so interesting watching him be a sad sack and get hit in the face, hit over the head with a flower vase or whatever, and just be like, hey, what the hell, man? And it's like, you're a rapist.
That was uncalled for.
Yeah. It just, it's there's a nuance to that kind of character, you know, someone who's like so of his time, so, you know, a product of the being socialized in the, you know, 40s, 50s, and 60s, that he's not like a tough guy. He just at one point thought his wife wanted to be sexually assaulted. And yeah, just watching him be, you know, sad and stuff was fantastic. And then watching Roger sort of pretending as if the reason...
I don't think he thought she wanted it. That was kind of the whole thing, is that...
You think that Annabelle... He thought Annabelle didn't want it?
Oh, I thought you were talking about Dr. Rape.
Well, no, I was about to switch over.
Oh, yeah. No, you said, like, he thought that she wanted to be sexually assaulted.
I think she did. I think he did think that.
I think he was disciplining her.
I think he's just a whiny, bratty shithead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. He spent that whole sexual assault scene,
punishing her because he felt jealous of her.
I thought the lead up to it was, oh, clearly this woman is experienced, and the experience means that she's into slutty stuff, like me forcing myself upon her.
No, I read it as he was felt like emasculated because she'd been with other men.
Oh, okay.
That is kind of the one note that he plays as a character, is constantly failing and not being up to his incredibly commanding and beautiful wife.
Yes, yeah. Well, either way, it's interesting to see him, you know, in this particular spot, because he's not going to be a surgeon, and now he's like switching to psychiatry. Meanwhile, you know,
I almost suggested you do your Bada B stories to like a surgeon, but I realized that would just
be in the 60s, unless it's. I think at least one episode a season I will do like a Sabrina Carpenter song.
Yeah, I was hoping that you'd sneak in a 311 one for this one. I was really looking forward to hearing you rap.
I'm so sorry. I thought about it, but I did such a good job with Amber.
That's right. During you did the do wire. Amber already.
Yeah, that I was like, listen, I can't top Amber. But yeah, the Roger storyline is great too, with him pretending that, you know, I just love my wife too much to cheat with this woman who broke my heart, when instead what he really wants is just to make her really feel bad for breaking his heart. A lot of good stuff. A lot of good stuff. Let's start with Roger and Annabelle, since that seems like a fun one. So Roger sees...
Great. I mean, yeah. I love the storylines that they weave in here. They're like, okay, we got this movie, The Misfits, that made people hate that people were using horse meat for dog food, which does feel like such a perfect perfect comment on like the things Americans decide to care about, because like we 'cause
movie said so.
We like to write the love songs to our imagined past, where it's like, oh, but we're cowboys, we ride the horses, we don't feed them to the dogs.
In America, it's different. They're friends, maybe our only friends. Yeah.
So then, they weave that in with like, oh, what if we did a riff on Casablanca with Roger and Annabelle, where he was the one that got away.
Yeah. Well, explain that to me, as someone who's seen Casablanca one time.
Need to see it again, because every time it gets better. I watched it for a podcast a couple of weeks ago, and every single time I watch it, I think it's not going to be as good as I remember it.
Well, I saw it once years ago, and then there was like Nazis in it, and I was like, ooh, big yikes.
Yeah, this is cringe, fam.
Yeah, this is very cringe.
Declared that Humphrey Bogart was having a bruh moment and turned the movie off. Well, been there.
Exactly.
So you want me to explain the plot of Casablanca?
No. Explain, you know, in which you believe it ties in. Because beyond the ending, I think Roger makes a really good point about how their situation is not at all like Casablanca, but she keeps saying it is.
Yeah, yeah. But well, the tie-in is that they had this... pre-war halcyon period, and they sort of got separated by the war and married other people because of circumstance, which is the tie-in to Casablanca, because that's Rick and Ilsa kind of had the same situation. But I also think they're doing a parallel between Annabelle and Roger, where she married the guy who was, you know, had the money and was like the big provider guy, and felt and, you know, later came to regret it. And I think Betty is sort of in the same situation here, where she sort of married the guy that she thought was like Mr. Big Pants, and is coming to regret it now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's exactly right. I love the, you know, tie-in with, okay, this is a show about advertising, so we have to have something. And they're like, okay, she owns Caldecott Farms, which is getting a lot of flack because it serves horses as dog food. Mm-hmm. And so they have to, like, you know, try to – she wants to basically – figure out a way to market horse meat the way that they market pig meat and chicken meat, you know, the way they all have.
She makes some good points, I thought.
I
did too. I was like, you know, that is true. And then, you know, part of me was just like, Yeah, I guess they do have like food names for animals that we mm-hmm. eat. You got pork. You got
even
beef.
Deer, venison.
Yeah, venison.
That's when she brings up venison. Somebody at that moment, I think, is just like, "All right, yeah, we get it. Like, let's not do any more meat names." Like,
well, thank God, because I ran out. I was like, "Yeah, what else is there?"
There are certain periods, like before the invention of the microscope, when all biologists did was like come up with names for stuff. Where they're like, "All right, a group of crows is called a murder."
Yeah. Much easier job at that point, because it's like if you didn't know why people were dying, and somehow you were just like, "It's probably humors." Yeah. I'm just gonna go name some more groups of animals that you see.
But yeah, she needs help with figuring out what to do with the dog food company.
I loved her entrance where her and Roger immediately mm-hmm. have like, you know, they clearly have like a connection.
Yes.
And Don says like, "Oh, it seems like you two don't
even
know
each
other." He
said, "I can't tell if you've met before, if this is the first time." So she's, you know, wants him to market this horse meat. Meanwhile, you know, Roger's making dick jokes. Mm-hmm. And alone together, we find out
that's how you wooed a woman in the 60s.
Yeah.
Dude, God, I wish we could be back there, man. I'd have been people. I could make a dick joke out of anything.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm
no one had invented making lum sounds at that point. It's a totally different era.
Dude, I would have fucking killed in the 60s. Lum, it's an onomatopoeia. Doesn't it sound like it?
What if I did that to you?
Okay.
I'm taking this way off the rails, but did you read the Cosmo article where the writer went out, like she went on these conservative dating apps and like wrote about the dates that she had with
men? I read like half of it, and at some point I was like, it feels like she's making this up. But
oh, you
like,
think? Okay.
But also, I don't know. Like, I don't know how perverse, like if you're in like Washington, D.C. or mm-hmm. wherever, wasn't she in D.C. or in New York?
I'm not sure.
If you're on like MAGA date, like I guess I don't know where the bottom is, but the idea of like all of these guys like instantly within minutes of like starting a date are like standing up and making a scene about liberal women and being like, "Bring me 5 more iced coffees."
Yeah.
Like, and every restaurant is
I fell for it, I guess. I was like, "Oh man, that guy drank 11 iced coffees and I mean, that's a very specific number to just make up.
Yeah, it is. It's a funny number. If you were making it up, I would give you credit for coming up with a...
the funniest.
That's true.
Number.
Maybe she made it up. I don't know. I was entertained. I'll say that.
Yeah, it was entertaining.
Well, you guys should read that on the, you know, read yourself a Cosmo. But we're talking about Mad Men. Oh, is that Brent?
Yeah, I'm going to take a break to read that article. So we
already,
it
is time for us to take a break. So everyone, please stick around. Read Cosmo. We'll be right back. Hey, Vince.
Hey, Matt. Are you ready for what's coming?
I don't know. That sounds ominous. What are you talking about specifically?
Oh, I was just talking about the holiday shopping season. It's officially here.
Yes, it's the most wonderful time of the year. The time between now and the mad dash to buy everyone in my family something special for the holidays.
Luckily, Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else.
Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high-quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, making every gift feel meaningful and truly one of a kind.
Yeah, one product I like is this cast iron potato baker.
Does sound like something you would like.
I love to bake a potato, and this, you just stick them right in there. You stick it on the grill. It's made of cast iron. Boom. Your potatoes are freaking baked, dude.
I love it. That sounds nice. I am looking at something special for my daughter for this holiday season. It's an MLB Sunday Slugger ceramic ice cream bowl set.
Do you mean Sunday like the day Sunday?
No, I mean like ice cream Sunday.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So she loves ice cream, but she doesn't necessarily, she's not aware of baseball. She knows it exists. She has very little interest in it, and I would like her to be a Dodgers fan. So I would like her to associate the Los Angeles Dodgers logo and helmet with eating a nice, delicious bowl of ice cream. So, it's really nice. It was created by the in-house team at Uncommon Goods, and they're durable. They're ceramic, and their versions of all the beloved retro bowls that lets fans of all ages enjoy their favorite sweets as they did back in the day.
What a great idea to manipulate your child.
I'll do anything for love.
It's true. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from moms and dads to kids and teens, from book lovers, history buffs, and die-hard football fans to foodies, mixologists, and avid gardeners like me. I love to garden.
You're a gardener.
You'll find thousands of new gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else.
When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date.
So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off of your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/podyourself. That's uncommongoods.com/podyourself for 15% off. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Imagine yourself a man talking about gypsies and hobos. All right. So we find out that Roger and Annabelle have a history together. She wanted to see Roger. And also, her husband is dead. So she sets up a business dinner with Roger at a French restaurant. And at that restaurant, Roger's already sitting there drunk by the time Annabelle shows up. And he is just incredibly immediately mean to her the entire time. And he's, you know, trying to explain, like, I love my teen wife. And and they, yeah, they bring up Casablanca, and this happens.
You're trying to tell me when you saw Casablanca, you didn't think about me.
You mean Peter Lorre?
You seem so happy to see me, and now you're just being...
That's, first of all, sick burn.
Yeah. This is, I mean, obviously it's like there's a not a wish fulfillment aspect to it, but the fact that the drunker he gets, the funnier Roger Sterling gets. It's worth telling young people that that's not necessarily true.
That's
right. You might find different experiences.
Yes, this is, you know, this is alcohol industry propaganda. Some people just become terrible when they're drunk.
And some people unlock roast mode after two martinis, as he does in this. Which is...
Yes, he does.
Drunk.
Look, Annabelle, we were not in Casablanca. The only similarity is that you left me for another man.
And she gets on the plane at the end.
That woman got on a plane with a man who was going to end World War II, not run her father's dog food company.
That's fucking great.
Again.
Sick.
That one landed.
Yeah. It's very good. And they're both getting progressively drunker. He is ordering full bottles of wine. They're drinking, and they're in the hotel lobby or, you know, wherever the fuck they are. And she is clearly down to smash. But he is turning her down. He is saying straight up, no, I love my teen wife. Stop trying to break me up from this beautiful child that I have trapped. And meanwhile, you know, back at the office, there is a focus group for dog food, which is one of my favorite scenes in the episode. It is the only scene where advertising is going on tangentially. And it is, you know, it's Mad Men's strong suit, in my opinion.
I am a dog owner and a dog lover, and I always find it weird when they're just like showing everybody feeding their dogs the wet dog food from the can, because I've never fed any of my dogs that. Maybe that makes me like a bad owner. I've only given them dry kibble because the wet food is just disgusting to me. Like, it stinks.
Yeah.
It's like you have this cans of stinky stuff around, and like, unless you throw it away, it like gets it's gross. Like, wet dog food is so disgusting.
Yeah, I feed my cat wet cat food.
Well, yeah.
Cats
kind of need that.
I like to keep my pussy wet.
Okay.
Thank you.
I do think that wet dog food is more or less out of favor for the reason that Vince brought up, that it's like, and they've come up with like better looking or smelling versions of it, but I feel like it's not that dogs don't like it. It's that I think that like sometime in the intervening 60 years between when this episode is set and where we are now, people were like, I don't want to have anything that looks and smells like that near the floor of my home.
I mean, definitely. Yeah, dogs love it. Obviously, if I was like a good dog owner, I'd give my dog that.
Most dog owners I know don't give wet dog food. Most of the dog owners I know are the same. In fact, most cat owners I know, it's similar. Like they will maybe feed like, you know, once in a while, half a can of wet food. But they, I know a lot of cat owners who are just pure dry food. Yeah. So I don't know whether or not that's good or bad, but apparently Calicott got hoarse. So
I like the view into 60s PR where it's like, oh yeah, just name the company something else. People will forget. People will think that yours is the only dog food that was made out of horse and not all the dog food. So yeah, you can just, it's funny that there wouldn't just immediately be an article of, oh yeah, this Caldecott Farms just changed their name to like to Gentle Meadows. And now
it is weird how well it works.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, that didn't stretch. I had the same thought where I was kind of like, well, you could do that nowadays because of woke or whatever. But then like, but back then it's like, yeah, I think you could have just done that. Like the reason they didn't do it was that she was like, that's my dad's name on the horse meat dog food concern that I'm running into the ground.
Only people that get away with this kind of thing now are like mercenary companies where it's like, no, we're not Blackwater anymore. Now we're just,
triple canopy. Like that's a totally different thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And the funny thing is she's like, we can't change the ingredients. I must kill horse. And we can't change the name. Is that their last name? No, it's just the name that her dad came up with. Which I'm
it's
like,
not okay. It's not we must kill horse. It's like her entire thing was owning a horse farm.
Right. I guess so. I guess that makes sense. Like, you know, you can't all of a sudden change.
She's like, we have a horse processing facility. That's kind of our whole thing.
What are we going to do? We bought this machine that grinds horses.
You can't just use a horse skinner for something else. It's designed to skin horses.
It does one thing.
And we make half our production costs back on selling the hooves to glue factory.
So my task for you is to make all the things that I just said sound normal. Can you do it or not? Because if you can't, I'll find somebody who can.
We spent fucking $2 million last year on horse Holocaust materials. Right. You're telling me I can't use them no more?
We see 10,000 horses reduced to an edible pulp. And now...
I got an entire silo filled with pink horse slime. What am I supposed to do with that?
Oh man, but yeah, so she, you know, is basically, you know, handcuffing them, and so they run a focus group in which they don't even say that it's horse meat to the people. They just have their dogs eating dog food, and they say, what have I told you, this was Caldecott Farms, and one of them is like, how dare you, and they all start talking about how, you know, it's wrong and evil and all that stuff.
It's just weird because if that was my dog, I was like, oh, he likes it. Yeah.
Right.
Line them horses up. What else are you going to do with a bunch of horses?
I mean, I don't know. That's a great question.
I'm not riding them. What do I care?
Yeah.
When you're not riding the horse, what are you supposed to do with horse?
Just be near horse.
Just pet horse?
Commune with horse. Yeah. Like have a meaningful. Yeah. Like in a Western or whatever. Like you're like.
Yeah. But
standing
it's not like
near it.
I can't fit a horse into my apartment. It's definitely not allowed. So if I'm not riding horse, then I should be passively killing horse.
Right. Yeah. Well, the problem is like when people wanted to have an introspective moment, there weren't as many swimming pools back then that you could just jump into and like sit under the water to have that moment.
That's true.
Where you think
had to
about
ride
your life.
A horse.
You had to go and stop your car next to like a pasture and watch the wild horses sort of.
Yeah.
I thought you meant go ride a horse and have an introspective moment.
Michael Claytoning used to be the American pastime. Would just drive up, park near a bunch of horses and look at them.
No, these are not. I don't think the eating horses are the riding horses. No. I think these are just the ones that are.
I wonder if I've ever met an eating horse.
So I've eaten horse.
Oh.
I'm just going to go ahead and put the cards on the table. It was in Italy, and I was not told that it was horse that I was eating until after I had eaten some of it. And I didn't care for that. They had made it into like capicola, basically. Like it was like
You had horse capicola?
I had horse copa, yeah. And. I don't remember it being bad. I just remember I didn't ever learn to speak Italian very well. I was studying clopa over there for a summer. And what's up?
It was clopa.
Clopa.
They go clipa clopa.
Clipa clopa. But what I remember saying in Italian.
They come up past the restaurant. They go clipa clopa.
Clopa.
It sounded so delicious. Yeah. So I had to say, try to explain to the people that had served it to me why I didn't want any more of it. And I said in Italian, in America, horses are our friends, which is not even true. I'm from suburban New Jersey. I've like been within 10 feet of a horse 5 times in my life, but it was, that was all I had.
I love that.
That's... Il cavalli sono, sono amici.
Yep. It was basically what it was. Like,
I would, if I had been the Italian you were talking to, I'd be like, that makes no sense. Guns are also your best friend, but yeah, yet you eat gun all the time.
Yeah.
Ask any police officer. They always eat a gun.
They love to have it a gun.
They love to eat it a bullet.
I also had some horse sausage, I think, in Budapest. And I wanted to like it because I like the idea that why wouldn't we eat a horse? But I didn't really like it because I didn't like the taste very much.
Yeah. It was very lean is what I remember, which is like not what you're looking for too from a like capicola style experience. Like the fat's where the value is.
Though. Right. Yeah. That's what makes it fun to look at. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Like Matt's mom.
You fucking
all right.
So... Anyways, Annabelle's watching this focus group and is like, turn it off. And she's, and Peggy goes, I can't. It's actually happening. and then Roger tells her to let it go and, you know, says it's over. Clearly, you know, double meaning there. They walk away and they have a little confrontation about the night before. And here that is.
Is this about last night?
I don't even remember last night.
Oh, well, you threw yourself at me and I turned you down.
I'm right. You want to hurt me.
You want to know if it was a great time? It was. You want to know if you broke my heart? Obviously.
You were the one.
You weren't.
Oh.
So that you weren't and oh sequence is probably one of the most devastating like moments. It's just watching... like the callousness and the coldness with which Roger is ready to just fucking just suplex slam her heart to the ground. I have mixed feelings about it because I'm just like, he's definitely clearly wants to hurt her. And we never fully really know why other than like, you know, this is someone who broke his heart years ago. But yeah. Anyways,
She is acting like a spoiled little rich girl.
Sure, but I mean, you know, you still got to be nice.
Sure. No, I agree with you.
Yeah. But I'm saying you can feel too, like the Roger Sterling part of it. It's like regardless of the feelings that created it, there's also he takes a great deal of pride out of being married to a fucking 19-year-old who doesn't know anything. And I think that the idea of this woman who is like age appropriate and also you know an age appropriate dime. Shout out to Mary Page Keller.
Yeah, I know. Oh my God.
That he's just got no interest in that. Like that what he wants is to like he doesn't want anything having to do with the past or his past in his future.
Right.
And I think he's like extra callous in that regard because it's like he would regard anything that had anything to do with the person he was or the times that he's been through or whatever with like a sort of disgust for that.
Yeah. Reminding him that he lived through the 20s. Yeah. No,
right.
No.
Yeah.
Right. And that this kind
of. And then Hemingway said, oh, that's not my gun.
Yeah. Yeah. I eat horse and my gun. So moving on to the Joan storyline. This is a quick one, but.
If Hemingway was here, he'd shotgun this wine.
All right. So Joan is helping out Greg, a.k.a. Dr. Rape, rehearse for an interview that he has with to be a psychiatrist. And he won't answer this question about his experience with psychiatry. This is like, I love this scene because it's, I mean, just in terms of its parallels with Don and Betty's storyline, the fact that like he finds himself shocked that he's never once been vulnerable with her. And I have that clip.
What experience have you had with psychiatry?
That's kind of personal.
Okay, now I'm curious why you won't answer the question. What is your experience with psychiatry?
Well, none personally, but my dad had a nervous breakdown.
I didn't know that.
And no one was buying furniture. My mom ran away for 2 weeks because he wouldn't get a Christmas tree. A head shrinker got him through, but we weren't allowed to talk about it.
Answer like that. This.
Okay, I love just getting the Cliff's Notes on that.
Yeah, he did that in such like clipped vernacular.
Loved it. It was like, well, basically what happened was remember when no one was buying furniture?
Right, the great furniture drought of '09. Well, my family took it on the chin in that one.
Yeah, and so
we had sectionals piled up in the hallway.
Yeah, ottomans everywhere. He had to close his store, Ottoman Empire. But like, then also just being like, but that wasn't the half of it. The drought, it was also, he wouldn't buy a Christmas tree, so he escaped for 2 weeks. Like, that entire, you just kind of want to know more. And I love that they leave it, you know, just for you to know.
I don't need to know more about Greg.
No, neither do I. But I love, if you're going to give someone a nice Cliff Notes version of their trauma, I like making it just so weird and indecipherable that you can kind of guess.
Yeah, it's like a nifty little bit of writing. It is really like three sentences that basically says, this guy had a bad time, never processed it or talked about it as a matter of course, and also because that's how his family was. Yeah. And then it's like so locked in on his own bullshit that he never brought it up to, again, his wife, who's, you know, I think everybody's wife that watches this show, everybody loves Joni.
Right. Also, you know, it's like saying something like saying, I don't know, that sounds kind of personal to your own wife is very funny.
Especially like a mock interview thing for a position in the psychiatry department. Yeah. They'll be like, well, I don't play that shit, actually. I always thought it was stupid.
Yeah. I was like, no, I of course would not talk about it. This is anyone who goes here should be ashamed.
So, also, just like as a character name, I mean, no offense to all the Greg listeners out there, but Greg is like a great annoying guy name.
Yes.
It's like one of those names that you want to shout across the room. Like, I feel like Greg and Kyle are great. Like, shut up, Kyle, or shut up, Greg. Like, it's one of those names where like, dude, get out of here, Greg.
That's why the sexual assault was so like, whoa, because you don't expect a guy named Greg, you know, to be like that, especially one who looks so Mormon.
So I had forgotten about the actor that plays this part, but he is a frequent Hallmark movie leading man. I've seen multiple films with him in it for the Hallmark podcast that I do with Jeb Lund.
Yeah.
And he's like, he's good at that. Like, if you take the petulance out of it, he is basically what Matt just described, like just kind of a handsome, faintly Canadian seeming, tall drink of water, Mormon vibes guy.
Yeah.
But,
and he's great. I mean, you know, the character, it serves a really good purpose. And, I kind of like watching him struggle. You know
what his real name is?
Is it Greg?
The actor?
Yeah, I do.
So he goes by Sam Page, but his real name is actually Sam Elliott.
Is that true? Oh boy, that's tough.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
He should have done the voice for this.
Yeah. Hey, it's me, Tony.
Head shrinker got him through. I can't believe I never talked about it.
Joan calls Roger and asks for a favor. She needs a job while her husband is searching for jobs. And that's just a cute little scene. And, you know, Roger just likes that someone would think to call him for a favor. And he calls someone to help her out. And we'll see if that comes to anything in the next few episodes. But Joan comes home to Greg sitting sad on the couch. He is,
by the way, I just have to sneak this in there, but we all love doing the Sam Elliott voice. Sam Elliott's from Sacramento.
That's fucking,
I feel like I did know that he was like a California guy.
He grew up in Sacramento and Portland, Oregon, which is really fucking funny.
Hey there, partner, could you put some bacon on my donut?
Could I get extra Fruit Loops on that frosting?
Well, wearing a flat white in a way that takes him 45 seconds to say it.
My mother was a claims adjuster for Aetna.
I actually met Lawrence Funderburk at a King's meet and greet event. Nice man. Tall.
Well, the Maloofs own this town.
I'll tell you about a man, Mike Bibby.
No, that was a man. Peja Stojakovic and Mike Bibby.
White chocolate, they call
it. I'm not going to say Darius Sungaila in that voice, but only because I don't think I can. Yeah. I don't know how to do it.
Sungaila.
Sungaila.
okay, he doesn't want to be a psychiatrist anymore. He's really sad. He's like, I did everything they told me to do. You know, I went to school. I got good grades.
Why nothing for Greg?
Yeah, I sexually assaulted my wife. Everything society asked me, and I still fucked it up.
I'm not dumb like everybody says.
Not.
I could be a psychiatrist in John F. Kennedy's America.
Yeah. So then, yeah, so this is an interesting one. So he's like, you don't know what it's like, Joni. You've never wanted something and not gotten it. And then she brains him with the vase. So I think the thing is supposed to be like she brains him with the vase because he's telling her she doesn't know what it's like to want something her entire life and not get it. Is the thing that Joni wants her entire life and doesn't get like to be the wife of a doctor? Is that what it is?
I think that is on the surface of it. I also think it's like she to say to her and probably most women, you don't know what it's like to, you know, to want something that you can't have. You know, she's someone who
wants to be like an independent woman and
her job's prospects are, you know, work at a department store, work as a secretary, you know, and she's just like, how fucking dare you? You've got all the goddamn options in the world. I literally am not allowed to be a surgeon or whatever.
Right. You know? And she's like the most commanding and competent person in every space that she's in.
Right.
In the show. Like, I mean, she's like of the whatever. It's like mercurial is like Don's genius is like Joan is like the best employee that Sterling Cooper has, as I remember it. Yes. And so, yeah, the idea that like now her job is like wiping this 31-year-old baby's ass as he cries about this stuff is just like, perfectly reasonable. Joni's innocent for smashing a vase over this guy's head.
Oh, no, I think she should have hit him with like something harder. But yeah,
like a horse.
Yep.
Throw a horse on him.
Horse.
So he gets hit in the head. Later, he comes back. He brings flowers, and he's just like, don't worry, Joni. I figured it all out. I'm leaving. So he's joined the army.
It's a Deus Ex military industrial complex.
Yeah. You know, he's like Don. He's running away from his problems, but in this case, he's framing it as like, don't worry, you'll be taken care of. And for her,
I'm gonna join the army. Anybody can be a surgeon in the army.
Right, yeah. Exactly. There's always blood and guts that need to be pushed back into a tummy. And you really feel for Joan in this moment because, like, I think for him, he's thinking like, I all Joan wants is for me to be like an important surgeon, and also all Joan wants is for me to like take care of her. And I think that Joan, after hitting him with the vase, is kind of like, I can take care of myself. What I want is a husband who's like here and loves me. And, you know, it's clear that she's not going to be getting that anytime soon. So that's that storyline. Now
you know
we
what?
Go.
You know what Joan is like? She's kind of like one of those horses that doesn't want to be tied down.
Like grounded and turned
into a paste for dogs.
Yeah. Yeah, she wants to.
She wants to roam free. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can I say one thing about that little arc? I guess I don't know if I'm stepping on the toes if we're going to a specific thing on the Joan Roger bit, but I was reminded again of what an interesting relationship those two had in the show. That he's like, you know, he's very harassy and bantery to her, like he is with everyone else. But there's something really, and I don't know. I didn't see the last couple seasons of the show, and it might be that I'm missing some stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if they like had a relationship of some kind in the past or whatever.
They did. All right.
But he treats her with like he seems to respect and fear her more than anybody in a way that he does not respect even Don in the show. That he really adores and kind of reveres her. And it's an interesting note to see him playing in the same episode when he is like as mean as he is in the entire rest of the series.
Right.
In the other scenes that he has.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, cause like they, you know, Joan and Roger, they kind of, you know, they're kind of a different version of him and Annabelle, you know, kind of in some fashion, just in terms of like a relationship that didn't work out where these two married other people. I think for Roger, Joan is, I'm not saying this to denigrate him or his character, but like, I think Joan is a cool girl. to him.
Yeah.
Like, Joan is someone who he has, you know, pushed around a little bit, like, jokes around, truly is, like, harassy to her in a way that, you know, right.
Like, I just
boss.
Like to, like, toss that word off, like, it's like a, and it is normal in this universe, but, like, yeah, he says a bunch of shit to her that would, like, get you written up deservedly.
Oh, easily.
Yeah.
Easily. But, you know, with, when it comes to her, you know, relationship with him, I think that they both are coming from a place of, like, sort, not just mutual respect, but also there is that, like, love there. And so it is for him, he loves that she would call him to be like, I need a favor. Yeah. Like,
yes. I also think you're missing, like, the crucial, very simple factor, which is that Roger knows he could have had Joan. And that's sort of like, of course he has fond feelings for her because he knows he could have had her if he
That's part of how she, or as I recall, like, works in the office too, is that she's like, she's very commanding and, like, sort of unavailable in her way or whatever, but also, like, she makes him feel important by asking that question. Yeah. And he actually does go out of his way to help her, which seems, again, kind of un-Roger Sterling-ish, but I think he's, you know, whatever. I guess
has asked Roger's opinion for, like, years at this point.
Yeah, or help.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, and, like, building him up and making him feel big is, like, that's, again, that was part of her job, too, like, outside of the actual relationship they had. But
yeah, and he clearly misses her, too, misses her having her around the office, because she was an ally, and you know, he liked that. But now we get to Dawn and Betty. All right, so the whole episode starts out with this intro in which Betty is packing lots of clothes to go away for a week, which is a hint. And the kids are gonna leave with Betty for a week to go to, you know, somewhere in Pennsylvania, I assume, to see
somewhere on the main line.
Yeah. And leaving Dawn all alone at the house. While the cat's away, Don Draper is going to cheat on his wife. And Dawn notices that she's packing a lot of bags, and she asks for money. And she's, like, testing him, like, are you sure you don't have a secret stash of cash somewhere in a secret drawer filled with your past? And he's like, love you, honey. Bye. So
why are you being weird?
Yeah, stop being weird. Go away.
I gotta go see my Gumar.
Yeah. So we get to Dawn being at Mrs. Being at Suzanne. Is her name Suzanne?
Suzanne. Yes, it is.
Okay. I mean, first of all, yes, Abigail Spencer, she's a dime. She is also not a great actress. I feel like her one note in this storyline is that she's horny and also a little girl. And other than that, like, I feel like her character's not.
Why do you gotta make me feel weird for being attracted to her every time she's on screen?
She's definitely it's working an angle, it seems like, but it is not. It's not subtly written. I've seen her in other stuff, and she is good. I just think this is kind of a limiting part. But yeah.
So she has this moment where she talks about the delicious Alfredo sauce that she's gonna make. Dawn, that she learned at this restaurant, Little Italy, and she says, believe it or not, I get treated very well there. And I'm like, the fuck is that supposed to mean? Like,
you're just offended because you're Italian.
Well, yeah. I'm like, is there a version of the show where she was supposed to be Italian and that was, and like that we were supposed to get that? Like, she says it in a way that we're supposed to get it. And I'm
am I wrong that this is like a thing that she does a lot though, where she's kind of, I'm just going back because, like, I haven't watched the episodes, but I did listen to some of the previous ones.
Yeah.
And where she's constantly like reminding Dawn, she's like, I'm very hot, by the way.
Yeah.
And everybody wants to be in a relationship with me. So if you want to lock this down, like, you need to be decisive.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's sort of her being like, yeah, I went to a restaurant with a bunch of Italians working there, and you wouldn't believe like they were making the wolf cartoons.
Yeah, smoochy facing at me. Right. Their tongue turned into stares.
I got Bukita baptized by their drool. It definitely reminded me of the fun fact of Pepe Le Pew in France being Italian.
This is not us.
Zut alors, who would do that? Perhaps our immediate neighbors to the south.
So yeah, she's making the spaghetti and creamed butter and cheese. I'm hungry. She starts getting sad, and, you know, being like, man, you know, like, she's sad that he's sad. She says, if I remove myself from the picture, I see a man that is not happy. And I'm like, See, this is why I don't cheat. That's why I don't cheat on my wife. Because, like, now I've got two women in my life calling me a bitch. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. You're going to call me sad? I'm not sad. I'm with you right now.
I really liked John Hamm's face acting in that scene, because he's basically doing the thing that Sal does when other men hit on him, where she's like, I can just tell that you're not happy. And he sort of has that face where he's like, oh no, other people can tell.
Yeah, my fly is down facial expression. Yeah.
Yes, man. Everybody can tell you're not happy. That's your version of Sal being flamingly homosexual.
Yeah, and then being like 100% Italian, right?
Yeah.
I think I sold it. I don't think anybody caught that. Yeah.
But yeah, he's you know, like he gets kind of mad, where he's just like, all right, I'll be over here sulking if you need me. And then we see them together in bed, and she's like apologizing. She's like, sorry, I get like that sometimes. I get like that when I'm making spaghetti. And then Dawn suggests, hey, why don't we, you know, go out.
I get a little spicy when I'm making some spaghetti.
Yeah. At one point, Don goes like, did you put hot peppers in it? And she's like, yeah. How did you know? And I'm like, guys, what are we doing here? Everyone who doesn't, just like acting like that's a secret ingredient. Maybe it was in the 60s. Everyone ate everything out of cans.
Yeah, I meant to look up, but did not look up whether this was like historically accurate. Like, had scientists discovered fettuccine alfredo by 1963 or not?
They'd already bastardized it at this point. Cream.
Yeah. Oh right, you're not supposed to use cream, just straight parm, right?
Parm and pasta water. Yeah.
Fuck, I want to eat. Okay. So Don suggests they go to Mystic. Don't know what that is. All I could think of is Mystic River, and all I could think is that my daughter is it. And so she's like, are you serious?
Their branding had to take a hit. It used to be the vacation place, and now
it was like a place in Connecticut with an aquarium, and now everybody's like, yeah, that's where bad stuff happens. Sean Penn hates it.
Yeah, Sean Penn, yeah. Admit what you did. No, it's the vampires. That movie's so stupid. They're going to go away together, you know, for the rest of the week because, you know, family's out of town. Meanwhile, Betty is in PA meeting with her lawyer and her brother. And the stuff with her brother is great in this because, like, he just exists to be like, my dad hates me. And he's just mad that he's not going to get the house or something.
Yeah, there's a lot of like oops Alfredos in the supporting cast. This is like a million different flavors of like little whiny guys that can't do nothing right.
Yeah. And so he like runs away in a huff, and she has a lawyer close the door. I need to talk to you in secret. And
Please point out one like small detail in the scene that I didn't notice until the second time I watched it? So she has cornered this guy in a room, and she's like, hey, I got to talk to you about my marriage. And at that point, he's still holding his overcoat in one arm and his hat, like he's halfway out the door already. Yeah. Like, he clearly was not planning to stay in that room like long enough to set. He's like, oh shit, I gotta put my coat down. She's about to talk about her marriage.
Yeah, I felt bad too, because he does say like, I gotta go. Like, he starts the scene off with I gotta go. And and he gives advice to her in a way that anyone would when they gotta go. So she says, I just found out some compromising facts about my husband, and I have a little bit of a clip.
I just found out some compromising facts.
Are you afraid of him?
No.
Is he a good provider?
Well, he is, but that's not the point. It's a lie so big, Milton.
You have three small children together. At least go home. Give it a try. That's what I tell my own daughter.
Damn it, Betts. This isn't right.
I love that. It's a great button on a very serious scene. And his advice is, you know, like, basically she tells him, like, his name is not Don Draper. He had another wife. He's got a fake identity. What do I do? And he's just like, does he hit you?
Yeah.
No? All right.
Why don't you try to make him a nice plate of spaghetti?
This really does feel spaghetti. Like a recurring bit. This is like a type of scene from Mad Men movies too, or Mad Men episodes where like Betty gets together with a guy who is like 20 or 30 years older than her, receives an oblique receives an oblique compliment from them, and then the worst advice that you could possibly get. But I remember there being like the gynecologist one from the last episode that we
the gynecologist is like, well, that's the tightest pussy I've ever seen.
I was gonna say, first of all, looking good, second of all
keep making babies, it's all you're good for.
Before
the exam.
Do it again.
Don't. Sorry. Brent, don't cut that. Double it.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Don pulls up to the house with Suzanne and he goes in to get some stuff, I assume, and is met with both of his kids and his mean wife. Ooh, I'm Betty. I'm mean. He tries to get his hat out of the car a couple of times, and
they're like, we just wanted to say hi to Daddy, and she's like, get out of here.
Yeah, it's like, leave. And Betty won't let him leave to go get his hat out of the car, which of course is code for him trying to say run to Miss Farrell. She takes him up to his office and forces him to open up the secret drawer. Then meanwhile, Miss Farrell is waiting in the car the whole time. The scene in which like he won't open the drawer is very it's very good, because like at this point Dawn doesn't know anything other than she found his secret keys, and so he's just like, no, I'm standing my ground, I will not open it, I have private stuff in there. And she's like, you know, I already know what's in there, right? And then he's like, oh, geez. Oh, boy, man. I just really. It was just such a strange change in tenor, because I was like, you know, how do you not know that she's opened it? But it's so funny. Because like at that point, you just see him like committed to like lying about
stick
stuff.
To your story.
Yeah. And then, of course, she immediately makes him like crumble. Like he starts shaking and he's like, oh, I can explain. I need a drink and then I can explain. And he's like all shaky and shit. She starts feeling bad for him and is like, I'll get you a drink. Just sit down. And
she's happy. She finally found a vulnerability in him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's something I like. I related to this in one aspect, which is like sometimes in my both history with my own wife and pretty much, you know, every girl I've ever been in a relationship with, they've always at some point,
which is a lot, by the way,
which is a lot.
Oh my god, sell them for short. Real.
But it happens frequently where like someone will poke at me because they realize I haven't emoted in like a few weeks. And so they'll do something to make me have a reaction, and then I'll be like, oh, I get it. It's because sometimes I stay in robot mode for too long. And I feel like there was I felt in that situation.
You got to cry a little bit.
Yeah, sometimes you got to cry. It's like, okay, they want to see me cry, so we're going to do it.
There was also kind of a funny, like a little low-key comic beat to the scene, the version of Don before he deflates in that scene, which I think Matt described accurately, and it with a lot of sounds involved, where he's still acting like he's like got the commanding high ground in this thing, and it's like, there's a school teacher hiding in your car outside that you like, she doesn't know what's going on in there, like, and you're still being like, those keys are personal. I'm the man of the house. Like, it's like,
listen, before we talk about this, I gotta take this water dish to my car for some reason.
yeah.
It's for my hat. My hat is thirsty, and I'm worried that it doesn't know where I am or why.
I gotta poke some holes in the roof of the car for my hat. Don't worry about it. Also,
how long does she stay in that car before she's like, I don't think he's coming back. I need to get out of here.
I think she. I think she masturbated at least once.
It seemed like it was, the lighting was very dramatic when you do finally, there's like, you get a scene of her like letting herself out of the car and like carrying her suitcase down the sidewalk.
Just taking a big gulping breath.
Yeah.
And the, like, they've been poking the air holes.
Oh God. We was in there for like a week.
That was like hours later.
Yeah, it does. I would have guessed like 2 hours.
That's crazy. Yeah. I love that amount of faith. Yeah. Just be
the
like,
lighting also, it could have been twilight, but it could also have been her staying in there until like 5:25 a.m. and being like, well, I don't think that this is going to work out. Yeah. And I have to be at school in 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, well, I think if it was a guy, it'd be like 3 days later, him going, dang, I don't think I'm going to get laid.
Yeah.
God.
I'm starting to think I might not get laid tonight.
I mean, I'm really getting in my own head about this, I feel like.
One time I like gave someone $20 to buy some drugs, and he said, all right, hold, you know, first he was mad at me because I didn't have the agreed upon 40. And then he said, all right, hold on a second. And he walked away, and I was just like, oh no. And then I waited there for like 30 minutes going, he's gonna come back.
I fell for the oldest but also the simplest trick in the book.
Easiest, like, the easiest trick. Oh, he just needs to go get it. So yes, she is waiting in the car, and also now we get a bunch of explanation. He is explaining everything ever that happened. He ran away to join the army, tells her about the dog tags and changing his name. And there's this kind of moment that I feel like is sort of the like jackpot, like what she's looking for. And I have that clip.
And all I had to do was be him and I could leave Korea.
Be who?
Donald Draper.
You took his name?
Yes.
Isn't that against the law?
Yes.
So that moment to me is like, that's like jackpot. Like immediately that is everything that she is looking for in this, I think, confrontation. For her, the talk with the lawyer, I think, was trying to figure out like what her options are. And the lawyer tells her, like, you know, unless you have evidence of him cheating, you can't, you know, file for a divorce. And you probably won't get him to agree to a divorce, and he'll probably take the children, all of that stuff. And in that moment where he admits openly that, yes, what he did is a crime, I think it's almost like, I don't know, it just felt like in that moment, her work here is done. That's at least what I felt. I know she doesn't like show it too much on her face, but you really get the feeling that like, he has just admitted something that is sort of the nail in the coffin for her. Not just because, okay, I can use this to get a divorce, but also because she is a WASP. She cannot be with a criminal who is keeping this right. large
yeah.
secret.
Yeah, of all the things that happened, she's like, isn't that against the law?
Yeah, against yeah. the law for her. That's a bridge too far. So she doesn't have to worry about the kids being taken away or any trouble with him agreeing to a divorce, like caught him in a crime. And he just kind of goes on.
You think she would be sad
stuff.
About the kids being taken away, by the way?
I mean, that's a great question. I yeah. don't know. She's saying a lot of shit to him, like, you know, what would you do if you were me? Would you love me? God damn, that's like fucking brutal. Yeah. Finally, Dawn, you know, tells Betty about Adam and how he asked for help and Dawn turned him down. And I have that clip.
He came to me because he wanted help. And I turned him away. He didn't even want help. He just wanted to be part of my life. And I couldn't risk all of this. He hung himself.
So that is one of the like great acting scenes, I think, in Mad Men. As we were talking about earlier, the like whispering your lines and crying is like very much. It works really well. It's definitely something only John Hamm can do. And it's
when I do it, it seems really horsey and weak. I get a lot of criticism for it.
Yeah, exactly. It's really horsey. You sound like dog food. it's a really like fucked up. I don't know. There's like a little bit of manipulation too in the way that that is written. Because like he's breaking down crying about like, you know, my brother, he just wanted to be in my life and I didn't want to risk all this, you know, I didn't want to risk my family. And now you're leaving me anyway. You made me kill my brother for nothing. almost like we have to stay together or else my brother hung himself for no reason.
Yeah.
It's subtle, but I do still feel like we're dealing a little bit with the Don manipulation in that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, again, I couldn't risk all of this. Again, I have to point out, sir, there is a lady in your car.
Yeah, you always are risking all this.
Yeah.
You are constantly risking all of this. And then it was right after that scene where he's like, Don is like brushing his teeth, completely forgotten that there's a lady in the car, and Suzanne leaves the car and it's twilight and she's like, you know, I've waited long enough.
That was stupid because it was twilight when they pulled up to the house. By the time she left, it would have been like the street lights had been on.
My assumption with that is they didn't know where to like place the scene, but maybe not too long after, you know, he pulls up and like goes into the house, she looks and sees the other car is there and then, you know, is able to look at like, you know, hear the children going, Daddy!
Read context clues, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I assume that she left not, you know, 20 minutes after. What they didn't show was 20 minutes of her just, like, laying down in the car, trying not to be seen and trying to figure out when is a good time to run for her life. But I'm glad.
Yeah, it is true. I kind of had assumed that the process of Don Draper's entire life falling apart would have been, like, I assume that would have taken hours, but it's possible that that was like all in real time, that it was basically like from her confronting him to him brushing his teeth.
True.
Was like 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, it might be. I think that's probably fair to say. Don wakes up. Betty is already up feeding the kids and he keeps looking at her like, are we cool? At work, Don calls Suzanne, says, I didn't get caught, but, I can't see you anymore. She asks if he's okay. He's like, oh my God, you're so sweet. And she's like, no, what I mean is, am I going to get fired? and then they say bye. And she's like, and he says, bye, Suzanne. And that's when I went, Suzanne.
Right. Yeah. I thought her name was Joanne or Joanna or something.
I just been calling her Miss Farrell because, that's her name. So the last scene, they go out trick-or-treating. They pull up and the guy, it's like Francine's husband, the neighbor, is like, oh, look here. We got a gypsy and a hobo, which, again, not PC name. Look at this. We got a redskin and an oriental, you know, just very of its time. And then he looks at Don and he says,
look, honey, there's a little gypsy in here. I think she's about to steal my watch.
I guess you're here for the tricks. It's just
better give her a lot of candy. I hear she drives a hard bargain.
Oh, look, a shyster Jew. And then he looks at Don and says, what are you supposed to be? And he looks at him, he turns to the camera, makes direct eye contact with the audience, and he says, I don't know. And then
I don't know.
And then that's it. And then
I am a normal man.
Yeah. that's the episode.
Honestly, this is It shows what an incredible curve I grade these on. That, like, that is as, like, I could sort of see them setting that up, and I was like, don't you fucking do it, man. Like, it's like they were really, like, that is as on the nose as you can get. And yet, you know, whatever, everybody puts it over because they're all, you know, top of the line talent. Yeah,
give me that button, baby.
It is crazy for something that on the nose. Like, you might as well have turned to the camera and said, you know, in a way, every day is Halloween and that we all wear masks.
Right.
A metaphorical mask of who we are and who we claim to be.
A costume we never take off.
But it still worked. I loved it. Okay, anything that we missed? Vince?
Ooh, you know what I like? Very small point. When Roger's hitting golf balls in his office. As a golfer, they made his swing look very much like a 60s golf swing. Like, the golf swings are different, and he has a very, like, 1960s golf swing.
I love that.
That was a nice little note.
That's something that
is
noticed.
Interesting. Yeah. What's the difference? Like, is it hip stuff?
Well, you say a racial slur while you're swinging.
Yeah,
no, it's a little more. There's a little more sway, and it's like a little more hunched over. Like, just like pull up a video of Jack Nicklaus putting sometime.
Mm-hmm. I won't. Dave, is there anything we missed that you wanted to talk about?
I don't think so. I think we covered most of it. I think we talked also a little bit about the whatever Ms. Farrell conundrum there, and like, is this character, like, how are we supposed to feel about this character? Is it being done well or not? Like, but I think that, again, like, only having listened to the episodes that trace their relationship and not actually gone back and rewatched them myself, it was more or less like as I remembered, in the sense that there was something kind of like, there's a sincerity to her that I guess I was like sort of like wanting to believe, but the fact that she's like working an angle I found to be interesting in regard to this. That, like, this is, Don does have very interesting taste in women.
Yes.
Like, all of his girlfriends are, you know, dreamy in their different sort of ways.
And he has a thing where he likes, I think, the fact that they might ruin his life. It's like the risk factor with them is always high.
A big part of the appeal. And this is like the riskiest of the ones, in the sense that he is like fully shitting where he's eating now.
Yes.
Like, that this is not the sort of thing where you can be like, oh, I have a meeting in the city and I have to stay over. And unfortunately, there's no way for you to know what I do.
Right.
That's happening. Like, this is.
Yes. And if I had to give this episode, Vince, I am not going to look at those golf swings. You put it in the chat and
there's still images.
I'm not going to even look at the images.
I don't have time for that.
I don't have time for this bullshit. Mm. But yeah, if I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, you know what? I give it a B+. Vince, what do you give this episode?
It's all B+.
Wow. Dave Roth, what did you give this episode if you had to give it a letter grade?
Doing the famous bit where I talk for a little while, make it seem like I don't know what's going on, and might give it a different grade, but then I'm going to give it a B+.
The famous bit.
Everybody loves it. It's people approach me on the street. They're like, can you do it? Can you talk aimlessly for a little while before you say the thing we think you're going to say?
So I guess it's a solid B+ episode of Mad Men. And of course, a solid A++++++ episode of Mad Yourself a Man. David Roth, thank you so much for talking Mad Men with us.
Hey, thanks for having me. It was great. I learned some cool things about Sam Elliott, and I got to watch some good television and talk to my buddies.
I love it. Where can people find you?
Defector.com is the website, and then the Hallmark podcast that I alluded to earlier, where both the neighbor and Sam Page have been addressed as leading men in movies, is It's Christmas Town with Jeb Lund, and The Distraction is the podcast I do with Drew McGarry, and that's that.
Check them all out if you haven't. Once again, David.
Recording stopped.
Oh, fuck. Oh, shit.
Well, look.
Okay.
We're all recording ourselves.
Okay, hold on.
Anxious to get out of here and have a big bowl of Alfredo. It's mashing that button as hard as
it can.
It
said I ran out of space. Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking Mad Men with us.
Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing. Broken 60s guy.
Patreon.com/Fruckcast. $8 tier gets you a shout out. You got a prep name, prep school name, and we're ready to do it with two wonderful $8 or more contributors. Vince, are you ready to? Do you have your name hat on? And
ooh,
stuff?
I'm putting it on right now. I'm wrapping it up and putting a jewel on the front of my naming turban.
Oh, okay. Well, so we have two of them. Doesn't have to be a turban, but I get it. And the first is David Sproul.
David Sproul. David Sproul? What is he? A ship? We call this guy the Admiral.
Oh, a 3-hour tour with the Admiral. Make sure you watch Gilligan's Island. Thank you, David Sproul. And last is Daniel Goodrich.
Oh, how do you do, my Goodrich?
Because it sounds like my good bitch.
Yeah, you got it.
I got it, but don't call him that. He's good and more.
He's good and rich, like King Midas. That's this guy. Famously happy story about
that's right.
A guy who was happy.
Everything he touches turns good and rich. Thank you, Daniel, and thank you, David. And thank you to everyone out there who keeps the show going. If you would like to hear your name at the end of the episode, please give us $8 or more on Patreon by going to patreon.com/Fruckcast, joining the $8 tier. Fruckcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at all.
Here's another fucking Draper D. Almost done with season 3. Wow, it flew by. Dawn's family is going away to Betty's hometown in PA. Says goodbye. A week of cheating on his stuck-up wife. Hot for teacher every night. Don's a horny guy. Miss Farrell knows that this will end someday. Car, you hoe. Let's go, 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 go. Meanwhile, Betty, back in her town in PA, she's planning her own waspy way to go leave you. Betty wants to leave Don to fall. Talks to her lawyer, and Miss Farrell waits inside the car. Betty does an ambush. Shit, I was just about to go. No, 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 no. And Donnie admits that Donnie's not his name. Betty now has everything to go leave you, to go leave you, to go leave you.
What the fuck?
Can we?
What?
Can we turn David up a little bit again?
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. I don't want you to get lost in all of Matt's yakking.
Well, I'll be so the actual recording that I'm doing is going to be, I'll be quieter on that.
Okay.
But oh my, this turned itself back down.
Matt, can you just be quieter?
I can be quieter. Check this out. Look at this.
All right. This is all right. So I reset it on. You'll at least be able to hear me loud on this. And then when you're mixing it, you can just turn my shit up. I just didn't want to peek out.
Yeah. No.
Make sure this all stays in. I think people are going to really love.
People love that. All right.
Don't peek out like Matt's mother's bra.
Okay.
Hey, don't peek out like Vince's mom does on my dick.
You can't change it to pig. That's illegal.
Yeah. So,
I can.
Grok, send nudes.